Town of Normal firefighters have quite a haul to get to Normal Community High School and the Far East Side.
It takes approximately 9.5 minutes to get to the area of town, and we've been concerned about that.
The town hoping a new fire station will cut that time in half. That's next on Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, famous alum Jane Lynch returns to ISU to pay it forward to aspiring actors during a 3-week residency.
I don't know that I was ever happier than I was when I came to ISU. I mean, it was really one of the highlights of my life.
A sexual assault survivor shares the stories of survivors through love letters.
Every time I spoke up and told my story, someone told a story in return.
And jurors will soon decide the fate of 4 utility executives accused of bribing Illinois' once powerful House Speaker. Those stories follow a Bloomington Normal News update, which is just ahead. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story continues with local patient Bill Mackay.
So she put those things on and all of a sudden, poof. It was a full, rich sound that I could finally hear. But I remember having a tear in my eye because it was all of a sudden, why did I wait so long?
Bill's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. Work on a new fire station in Normal is picking up. The Normal Town Council has authorized negotiations with Core Construction to build the new East Side Fire Station. Core will be working with a Farnsworth engineering firm. In this interview with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker, City Manager Pam Reese lays out an updated timeline for that project.
I anticipate bringing something back to the council in the next 2 months for approval of a contract, and then the design part of the design build project will begin. We likely won't want to start construction in November or December. So I suppose right now we're looking at perhaps a spring 24 construction schedule, 9 to 12 months of construction, depending on supply chain issues. And ideally, let's say end of 2024, we could be in the new facility.
How much would that improve service to the east side?
The goal of moving to the east side of Normal was specifically to improve our response rates to certain parts of town, especially the northeast area, the quadrant of town that includes Normal Community High School, Eastview Christian Church, the Apostolic Christian Church and their development. Right now, it takes approximately 9.5 minutes to get to the area of town, and we've been concerned about that. That's not within NFPA, which is National Fire Protection Association standards. So our response time will improve from 9.5 minutes to between 4 to 6 minutes. And our goal is to respond within 4 to 6 minutes on calls 90% of the time.
What will you do with the old building that will be taken out of service along College Avenue, the former headquarters building?
That remains to be seen. I have notified council when we talked about the strategy to relocate all 3 of our fire stations over time. I've indicated that our existing facilities, we would come to council with a plan. And so it's up to me and staff to make a recommendation to council. We'll be looking at everything from retaining the property and reusing it for some other municipal purpose to potentially selling it. So there will be, that is yet to be determined.
You've been looking for a replacement for the subway in Uptown Station. Where does that stand?
We issued a request for proposals, I believe probably about 2 months ago, and we did have a response from that process. We are right now negotiating with that potential tenant. I think that if all continues to go well with negotiation for use of that space, we can go to council within, let's say, probably May or June with a proposed lease agreement. The prospective tenant is another food service vendor.
Is it a chain? Is it an independent?
It is an independent, and so we're working on finalizing details to see if it works for both the town and the prospective vendor.
Let's talk about the other restaurant in One Uptown. The Hacienda Leon project has moved a little slower than everyone had hoped. Where stands that?
Building permit was issued last week. So they are, as far as I know, ready to begin construction of that first floor space. They'll have to build a restaurant-ready kitchen and the like. So our inspections department issued a building permit last week to their contractor.
Normal Public Library Director John Fisher has recommended to his board that the library proceed with asbestos abatement, some of which is delaminating from fireproofing and structural pieces, so that they can do updates to internet, updates to lighting fixtures, and so forth. That's about a $300,000 project, but it would also include a refresh on carpeting and lighting. At the same time, the library has some reserves, but perhaps not enough to swing the entire project. Where's the town position on helping out with that?
I think the Normal Public Library has quite a bit of reserves in anticipation of perhaps a new library down the road. And so they've been saving money for either investing in their current space or getting ready to build in some other location. The bottom line in terms of the investment in asbestos abatement would be worthwhile if the board believes they're going to be there for a period of time, like maybe 8 to 10 years. And the library is very popular. All parties want to make sure it's a safe place for staff, for the public. And if the library is going to be at that their current site for a while, it may make sense in a cost-benefit analysis to invest in the abatement. And they can probably look at doing small pieces of the pie, you know, the part that's delaminating. But if that's just putting Band-Aids on and they're not able to do long-term investments, then I can certainly understand the board evaluating options to do a greater investment for what may be a medium-term duration in the space.
Is there any update on American Rescue Plan allocations and where that money will go?
Well, everything has been allocated of our $10 million, with the exception of about $600,000. I anticipate recommending to council that we use at least $500,000 of that for infrastructure, but we haven't finalized that. We do have until December of 2024 to have all those funds allocated. And then, of course, all the American Rescue Plan Act dollars have to be expended by December of 2026.
That's Normal City Manager Pam Reese, who says projects for which the town has already allocated pandemic relief money include Savannah Green Alleys and road improvements, work on the intersections of Fort Jesse Road and Landmark Drive, and Landmark and Greenbrier, the Maplewood Neighborhood Sewer Flooding Issue, Mark First New Facility, and expanded behavioral health programs, the Community Health Care Clinic, and a Carl Mobile Health Clinic. Reese spoke with WGLT's Charlie Schlenker. Tomorrow on Sound Ideas, Illinois Wesleyan University continues its revisioning at a time when liberal arts classes are seeing less demand nationwide. Join us tomorrow on Sound Ideas. Stories and conversations around Bloomington Normal and McLean County. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. One of Illinois State University's most famous alums, Jane Lynch, is returning to campus to help theater students tame their talent. 40 years after attending ISU as a student, Lynch is back on campus and spending the next 3 weeks at ISU as a visiting artist. WGLT's Ryan Denham has more.
Jane Lynch is perhaps best known as the intimidating cheerleading coach Sue Sylvester on Fox's Glee.
You know what? I checked out of this conversation about a minute back, so good luck with your troubles, and I'm going to make it a habit not to stop and talk to students, because this has been a colossal waste of my time.
She's an Emmy winner, an in-demand character actor, a game show host, and this week she added a new title to her impressive IMDb resume.
Please welcome visiting artist Jane Lynch.
Lynch will spend the next 3 weeks directing undergraduate students in a staged reading of Neil Simon's comedy Lost in Yonkers. She'll also visit with various classes and students throughout her stay. Lynch says she was inspired to direct theater after her recent run on Broadway, performing in Funny Girl. She says she called her former ISU theater professor, Al Goldfarb, who helped make it happen.
One of the things that I learned here that, like I said, it made me an actor was the process, the technique. And I blossomed. Once I kind of built the cage, the technique is the cage, and then you bounce around freely, because I was kind of out there. And, you know, that untamed talent. And so you come to college and that's what you have. You have a lot of kids who don't, they have talent, but they don't have any way of putting it to use. They don't understand taking a role apart and investing themselves body and soul into that role and figuring out what makes that character tick, what that character knows about themselves and what they're in denial about. I mean, all of that stuff I learned right here. And that's the stuff that takes your craft from being just something, you know, kind of mundane to something profound.
Lynch will be directing 16 student actors in the Lost in Yonkers reading, plus a student assistant director, stage managers, and dramaturgs. Goldfarb himself will also serve as a dramaturg. Rehearsals began Monday night. Lynch has reconnected with ISU in other ways in recent years, too. She appeared in a commercial for ISU in 2016.
State your passion at Illinois State University.
And the next year was back on campus to receive an honorary doctoral degree at Founders Day. Lynch spoke to local media this week at the Bone Student Center, just across the street from where she used to live when she was a student in the early 1980s.
The university experience in Normal, Illinois is like a prototype for the American university. Kind of plopped down in the middle of cornfields and, you know, a lot of kids like just off the farm too. Everybody hungry to learn and from the Chicago suburbs, and they all come and they gather on this beautiful campus. And that was like, I remember, I don't know that I was ever happier than I was when I came to ISU. I mean, it was really one of the highlights of my life.
Lynch is part of a remarkable roster of ISU students who went on to fame and creative success in film, TV, and stage, including Laurie Metcalf, Terry Kinney, and Jeff Perry. Lynch attributed that success to a melding of young talent and ISU's titanic theater faculty, including Al Goldfarb.
It was kind of a moment in time, like a perfect storm. You had these kids from, you know, all over the country, some of them fresh off the farm, some of them in the suburbs of Chicago, who came here at the same time that Gene Scharfenberg, John Kirk, Ralph Lane, Cal Prittner, and then eventually Al, who kind of made it all sane and made it all work, were here at the same time.
In fact, Lynch says she even drew on Scharfenberg's intensity for her portrayal of Sue Sylvester on Glee. I'm Ryan Denham.
Ann Haugo, the director of ISU's School of Theater and Dance, says her students are tremendously excited to work with Lynch and that ISU is grateful for her generous spirit. Sound Ideas is WGLT's news magazine. I'm John Norton. For just one more week at the Coffee House in Uptown Normal, Survivor Love Letters is a special gallery of display in honor of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. WGLT reporter Lauren Warnicke met curator Kylie Ashton Maurer to talk about the project.
This is the second year that Kylie Ashton Maurer has organized a collection of art and letters commemorating Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Last year, the gallery was at Normal Public Library.
It was really, really important to me, the accessibility of the event and the gallery, because I don't want it to just be for paying patrons. And I made that really clear to the staff and owners of the coffee house as well. And I just want to be something where everyone is welcome and it's something everyone can see. So even if you don't want to come into the coffee house, we've plaster the front windows with these lanyards of hearts and letters that can be read from outside.
Tell me a little bit about how you curated the show and your motivation behind it.
The first thing I usually do is I set out a call for artists and a call for submissions, and that's really seeking some more of our fine arts pieces. So along with the poetry and the paintings and the fine arts, we also have had submissions of short stories, short films, but the selection process is first going to the artists and receiving those works. And it's really important to me to get their consent on everything. So do you want your name with it? Do you want it to be anonymous? How do you want your work described and displayed? And having their input really strong in the whole process is of utmost importance to me. And then the letters, because there are so many letters here, those I collect through community events. So I do presentations and workshops at high schools, at sororities, through CERC, which is Students Ending Rape Culture at ISU, and Consent Day at ISU, as well as events alongside YWCA Stepping Stones. So during all of those events, I talk about my project, I tell my story, and I invite people to write a letter to a survivor they know, a survivor they don't know, themselves, or a younger version of themselves. And then here at the coffee house, we actually have a station for people to write letters and contribute to the gallery. So all the hearts all over the walls are letters that have been collected while the gallery's been up and people have contributed to the collection.
To the extent that you feel comfortable sharing the initial impetus for this project, what was your initial motivation?
In 2015, I was raped, and I didn't know what to do with that. I was really lost and really broken. I didn't get any help. I didn't tell a soul for years. And finally, I started to tell my story. I went to therapy, and I got some help. And as I told my story more and more, I realized that every time I spoke up and told my story, someone told a story in return. So I reached out to this filmmaker named Tani Ikeda, who is actually the founder of the Survivor Love Letter movement. And I reached out to her and I said, would it be all right if I did a local gallery based off of your work with Survivor Love Letter? She responded and said, absolutely, please do. You know, that's the point, is to get the word out. And so I started collecting these letters.
Some survivors and some people who have never experienced sexual assault may just want to keep it at an arm's distance, right? And something that I appreciate, even just walking past the coffee house and coming in, is like, you just see hearts. And you have to really get up close to see that this is about trauma.
That's a really excellent point to make. I have chosen very intentionally to share my story and to come forward. I am not ashamed of what happened to me, and I'm not the one who should be ashamed. There is no correct way to be a survivor. There is no correct way to be a victim. We don't change the tide by, you know, paper cutting ourselves again and again and again and again. We change the tide by doing what we can.
The thing about something like this is a lot of the response is passive. You don't know what people see or feel or experience unless they leave a letter for themselves. So how do you gauge response and have people approached you about being part of this in the future?
At the end of the day, this project is just me, and that's been an honor to hold these stories in this space for our community. And it's a big project. I was not certain that I would do it again this year. And then I realized, you know what, I did it 1 year, I've learned a lot, I can do this easier this year. And that was true. We had an anonymous letter given to the Normal Public Library. I've had people, while I was just putting the gallery up, I had a woman come up and say, these letters are to me. These letters are to me. And she sat down and told me her story right to my face. That's what matters to me.
The majority of the individuals that share their stories on these walls, their cases will never be brought to justice. Even if someone is brought to justice and sent to prison or whatever, that doesn't change anything, really. So I would just love to hear from you about that and how that kind of swirls around within this project and perhaps makes it even more necessary.
There's this kind of potential energy. If you decide that you want to go to the police and try and get justice, you have to build up all this strength. And when you are powerless, you have to build up all this strength to go to them. And you get there, and a lot of times you have a door shut in your face. And that's what happened to me. I went to the Bloomington Police Department, and the door was shut in my face. They told me that I was outside the statute of limitations, and I had to spend over an hour on the phone with the district attorney for them to recognize that nowhere in the law was I outside the statute of limitations, and that multiple people at the police department and in the district attorney's office did not know that. I never got justice, and so few people do. Only 25 out of every 1,000 perpetrators ever see prison time. So we have this potential energy where you finally build up your courage, if you ever choose to, because it is a choice to try and get justice through the legal system. And when that door is shut in your face, you have to do something with that energy. There are a lot of different outlets for that, but I think the gallery is an important space for that.
The last day to see Survivor Love Letters at the Coffee House is April 30th. This is WGLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. The federal case against four former Commonwealth Edison executives and lobbyists is likely headed to jurors this week. The defendants are accused of bribing longtime Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan to boost its fortunes at the State House. IPR's Dave McKinney reports.
Even before jurors were seated, this massive federal investigation cost former House Speaker Michael Madigan his job and reshaped Illinois politics. And for the past 6 weeks, the trial has shown unprecedented new light on Madigan's secretive political world and on the dim-lit ethical boundaries of Springfield lobbying. The prosecutor's case was built off of an untold number of secret recordings of Madigan and his allies, 150 of which were played in court. At the center of the case is one of Madigan's closest friends, Michael McLean. He's a longtime lobbyist whom ComEd paid for decades to be its eyes and ears in Springfield. McLean pushed ComEd's agenda with the speaker. He also flooded the company with resumes on Madigan's behalf. In those secret wiretaps played for jurors, McLean talks freely about the arrangement with fellow ComEd lobbyist John Hooker, who's now a co-defendant.
We had to hire these guys because Mike Madigan came to us. That's that simple.
That's how simple it is.
That's how simple it is. So if you want to make it a federal court suit, okay, but that's how simple it is.
Madigan wanted to place people at ComEd, from summer internships to a spot on the company's board. Some of those were his precinct captains and political friends, and some allegedly did no work, even though they were secretly paid hundreds of thousands of dollars that ComEd funneled through its lobbyists, including co-defendant Jay Doherty. Prosecutors say Doherty would get a big check, which he'd dole out to Madigan's people. The person who exposed the scheme was government mole Fidel Marquez, a former ComEd executive who wore a wire and was on the stand for roughly a week. Here, Marquez asks Doherty about the no-work subcontractors.
Can you remind me who all you have working under Doherty and Associates?
Yes. Frank Olivo, O-L-I-V-O, Ray Nice, N-I-C-E, and Mike, former alderman, Zaleski.
Marquez then asks the crucial question.
What do you have them doing?
When, not much, is the answer to the question.
Okay.
Not much.
That right there is the crux of the prosecution's case, that ComEd gave these no-work jobs to Madigan's friends, and Madigan pushed through legislation in Springfield. That, in turn, meant billions of dollars for ComEd, rescuing it from bankruptcy. Former ComEd CEO and co-defendant Ann Promajori got promoted based on those wins. After her promotion, she told McLean he and Madigan were responsible. They were her, quote, spirit guides, and she wouldn't forget it.
You take good care of me, and so does our friend, and I will do the best that I can to take care of you. You're a good man.
Well, don't let that out.
That reference to our friend is the code name that they used to refer to Madigan. Promajori and Hooker both testified in their own defenses, and they said that they didn't bribe Madigan, nor believe there was anything illegal about fielding job requests from public officials. But in the coming days, it will be 12 men and women who decide whether that was just politics and a legitimate form of lobbying, or whether it was a new low in corruption for a state that knows it all too well.
This is Dave McKinney.
And that is Sound Ideas Today. WGLT's news magazine is made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton. Story help today came from WGLT's Charlie Slinker, Ryan Denham, and Lauren Warnicki. The show was produced by Samantha Hill. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media, part of the NPR network.